The scripture lesson this morning continues our story of Jacob and Esau, and finally this moment that has been building for a while is upon us. Jacob and Esau will meet today after 20 years of being apart. Reading the 33rd chapter, the first 17 verses, and again using the translation by Robert Alter. Then Jacob raised his eyes and saw, and look, Esau was coming, and with him were 400 men. And he divided the children between Leah and Rachel, between the two slave girls. And he placed the slave girls and their children first, and Leah and her children after them, and Rachel and Joseph last. And he passed before them and bowed to the ground seven times until he drew near his brother. And Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell upon his neck and kissed him, and they wept. And he raised his eyes and saw the women and the children, and he said, "Who are these with you?" And he said, "The children with whom God has favored your servant." And the slave girls drew near, they and their children, and they bowed down. And Leah, too, with her children, drew near, and they bowed down. And then Joseph and Rachel drew near and bowed down. And he, Esau, said, "What do you mean by all this camp I have met?" And Jacob said, "To find favor in the eyes of my Lord." And Esau said, "I have much, my brother. Keep what you have." And Jacob said, "Oh, no, pray. If I have found favor in your eyes, take this tribute from my hand. For have I not seen your face as one might see God's face, and you received me with kindness? Pray, take my blessing that has been brought you, for God has favored me, and I have everything." And he pressed him, and Esau took it, and he said, "Let us journey onward and go, and let me go alongside you." And Jacob said, "My Lord knows that the children are tender, and the nursing sheep and cattle are my burden. And if they are whipped onward a single day, all the flocks will die. Pray, let my Lord pass on before his servant, and I let me drive along at my own easy pace, at the heels of the livestock before me and at the heels of the children, till I come to my Lord in Seir." And Esau said, "Pray then, let me set aside for you some of the people who are with me." And Jacob said, "Why should I find such favor in the eyes of my Lord?" And Esau returned that day on his way to Seir. Well, Jacob journeyed on to Succoth, and he built himself a house, and for his cattle he made sheds. Therefore is the name of the place called Succoth, which means shed. Here ends our reading from Scripture. May God bless us with understanding. In the autumn of 1988, I had a chance to attend Stephen Sondheim's Broadway hit musical, Into the Woods. That was when it played at the Colonial Theater in Boston, I think on its first nationwide tour. And what an enchanting show it was. Written and directed by James Lapine, the plot and Sondheim's music wove a lovely and imaginative fairy tale narrative. Cinderella, Jack of Beanstalk fame, the baker and his wife, Rapunzel, Little Red Riding Hood, and of course the witch, all got into the troubles like the ones you know about. Except now that their stories were all mixed together, Little Red Riding Hood buys bread from the baker and the witch is Rapunzel's mother, for example. But at the end of the first of the two acts, everything in the plot has been well resolved. The heroes are all living happily ever after. The witch has lost her powers. Cinderella's stepsisters have gotten their comeuppance. Cinderella gets her prince. The baker and his wife have a baby. And Rapunzel bears a set of twins. And at the intermission, I have to confess I was smitten by the wondrous way that Lapine and Sondheim had braided the old tales into a beautiful story with such a satisfying ending. Today's story of Jacob and Esau has a similar conclusion. Jacob and Esau have not seen each other since Jacob fled Esau's murderous rage. You will recall that Jacob cheated Esau out of both his birthright and his blessing. The text told us that Jacob was born hanging on to his brother's heel, grabbing him, holding him, trying to supplant him. But when Esau had had enough of Jacob's treachery, Jacob fled for his life. Now, over those 20 years they were apart, there were a number of subplots, especially contests between Jacob and his uncle Laban, over everything from marriages to livestock. But finally, it has come time to resume the main thread of the ancient story. Finally, it is time for Jacob to return to Canaan. And as we saw last time, as Jacob approaches the promised land, his anxiety level goes sky high. Awaiting him, he knows, is the fateful meeting with his estranged brother. Jacob is fearful for himself and for his family. And now today, the long-awaited meeting is to take place. Jacob leads a procession of family units and belongings. He bows, fully prostrate, 7 times. As he approached Esau. And we know from ancient documents of the period that such bowing was a ritual reserved for when one approached a king. Jacob comes to Esau as a subject comes to a king. And suddenly the tension of the story breaks into heartfelt joy. Esau runs and greets Jacob. He embraces him. He kisses him. Together they weep. In an instant they are reconciled. Bygones are bygones, and brotherly love fills the air. And we get a poignant sense of all that they missed of each other as they were apart for those last decades. Esau lifts his eyes and sees Jacob's entourage. It is a scene reminiscent of summers when I was a child, and we would visit my mother's family in Louisiana. After a year when their only contact was through letters, there would be long embraces between my mother and her parents. And then Grandma Lucy would look at us children and pretend that we had changed so much that she no longer recognized us. And she would say, "For goodness sake, who are these boys and girls that you have brought with you?" It was in jest, of course, but it was also tinged with more than a little ache for a year gone by apart from her daughter and her grandchildren. Between Jacob and Esau, the reunion, the love fest, continues. Jacob has sent a vast array of gifts to Esau, which Esau refuses, saying that he already has plenty. But Jacob counters, saying that he has plenty too. And then in a revealing remark, he says something that most translators don't show. Jacob says, "Pray take my blessing that has been brought you, for God has favored me and I have everything. Pray take my blessing." Be back before Jacob fled to Padan Aram. When Esau discovered his brother's deceit, Esau had cried in despair, "He has stolen my blessing." And as Robert Alter says, in giving his blessing to Esau, Jacob is making restitution for his primal theft, using language that confirms the very act. Here we see confession and restitution, forgiveness and reconciliation, all on lavish display. And next comes a little back and forth about how they will travel now. Esau suggests they all travel together, but Jacob says the herds and the children would never withstand the speed of Esau's company. Esau sees the wisdom of Jacob's worry, and then he offers to leave a few people to help, but again, Jacob says that Esau is just too kind, and Jacob declines the offer. And with that, Esau goes on ahead, and Jacob is left behind to go at a slower pace. After the intermission at Into the Woods, I went back to my seat. And as I waited for the curtain to open, I began to ponder what could possibly be next. The plots and subplots of the musical seemed pretty well resolved. Everyone was happy. Maybe the second half would be another set of stories with different characters from some other old fairy tales. It certainly didn't seem plausible that the second half would just be about everyone getting along hunky-dory. But as the second act began, that seemed to be exactly what we were headed for. Everyone seemed happy and fulfilled. But then cracks began to appear in the veneer. The characters, happy as they were, wanted more. The baker and his wife now have a precious child, but they wish for more room. Jack of the Beanstalk and his mother are rich and well-fed, but Jack misses his kingdom in the sky. And Cinderella is living with her prince, charming, in the palace, but alas, she is getting bored with him. Suddenly, what was reasonably light and straightforward and fun in the first act becomes dark, complicated, and dreadful in the second act. The characters are all drawn back into the woods for one reason or another, and there the plot becomes hopelessly entangled and cruel. The characters' motivations become sinister and ruthless. The once happy lot is anything but. In an ending fit for a Shakespeare tragedy, by the end of the musical, only four characters survive, and even they are anything but unscathed. There is no happy ever after ending. There is no simple moral. Sondheim and Lapine leave us with an agonizing and convoluted reality that is actually more a mirror of life than a fairy tale escape from it. I left the theater quite a little more unsettled than I had been at intermission. Well, I haven't been very subtle in setting up this for what comes next. Needless to say, there's more than meets the eye in the joyous reunion and reconciliation between Jacob and Esau. And like the musical Into the Woods, part of what meets more than the eye mirrors some of the baser realities of human existence. As we have seen, Jacob approaches Esau as if Esau were a king. At this point in the story, remember, Jacob is not sure what his reception is going to be like. He suspects that Esau may make good on his long ago threats. Notice how Jacob orders the procession. He goes first. I suppose no man with any self-respect could have done otherwise in the ancient Near East. But then the procession goes in reverse order of what Jacob most values. First the slaves and their children. Then Leah, his first wife, and her children. And then finally his favorite wife and son, Rachel and Joseph. From the very beginning, Jacob's treatment of Leah has been blatantly contemptuous. Rachel is his pride, and her son Joseph, his favorite child. It's hardly any wonder that Joseph's brothers will later come to resent him so much. Jacob and Esau meet and share a lovely reconciliation. They don't butcher a bunch of them. But the scribes may actually have made an error that makes the story look better than it is. Esau embraced Jacob, kissed him, and together they wept. Except that scholars think the original text says that only Esau wept. Jacob stood there impassively. That changes things a little, doesn't it? Anyway, the two brothers enter a formalized negotiation about giving and receiving presents or blessing and about travel plans. And of the former, Esau says, "What do you mean by all this camp that I have met?" And Jacob says, "To find favor in the eyes of my Lord." And Esau says, "I have much, my brother. Keep what you have." And Jacob says, oh no, pray, I have found favor, if I have found favor in your eyes, take this tribute from my hand, for have I not seen your face as one might see God's face, and you receive me with kindness. Pray, take my blessing that has been brought to you, for God has favored me and I have everything. When Jacob wrestled on the banks of the Jabbok in last week's reading, he finally exclaimed with no little surprise, I have seen God face to face and survived. And today he says of Esau, I have seen your face as one might see God's face, and you receive me in kindness. Now at this point, Jacob begins dotting the I's and crossing the T's. He acknowledges that Esau might have killed him, just as God might have in their face-to-face meeting. Jacob says immediately, pray, take my blessing, thereby telling Esau that he is restoring what he stole those long years ago. Seems quite nice. But Jacob reveals more than he may have meant to. Esau, in at first declining the gifts, has said that he has enough, and he doesn't need anything from Jacob. He has enough. And Jacob cannot help himself. He counters, God has favored me, and I have everything. Esau says he has enough. Jacob cannot resist going in one better. Hey, I got everything. And that reveals a second and more important point. Jacob is attempting to restore the blessing he stole from Esau, but in truth, it is costing him very little to do it. Jacob is giving to Esau from his endless abundance. In my most jaded moments, I look at the generous charity of such figures as Bill Gates or Andrew Carnegie and can't help but remark that their wealth was acquired on the backs of many others, not a few of whom were cheated, deceived, and conned and left ruined in the process. Jacob wants to come off as magnanimous, but he can't help reminding us that he's more a big shot than he is a benefactor, and that his giving is but a drop in the bucket. And finally comes the end of the scene. Esau wants the two families to travel together, or at least leave some help for Jacob. But Jacob insists on going it alone. He doesn't want to slow down Esau, he says, and he doesn't need the extra help. Jacob graciously insists that Esau and his entourage head south to Seir and that he will follow at his own pace. Very gracious indeed. Except for one thing. Just slide up. After Esau turns around and heads south, Jacob turns around and heads north in the opposite direction to Succoth, which means sheds, because that's where Jacob built temporary sheds for his livestock. Esau heads south, expecting Jacob to follow. Indeed, Jacob, again echoing old wounds, tells Esau, let me drive along at my own pace, at the heels of the livestock before me. Not all of the translations pick that up, but that's what it says. And the heels of the children, till I come to my Lord and Seer. Jacob grabbed Esau by the heels, you'll remember, as they were both born, and now he promises to be at Esau's heels as they both travel to Seer. This time, though, Jacob's treachery is just the opposite. He isn't grabbing the heel, he's letting it go. Jacob lets Esau leave, believing that Jacob will follow. But instead, Jacob goes north to Succoth. He waits a bit, as we will see next time. Once Esau has gone far enough to the south that he won't notice Jacob's movement, Jacob heads west across the Jordan into Canaan. At this point, Esau, who has magnanimously welcomed his brother home and hoped they would live together in harmony as a family, disappears into the mists of biblical history. In a few chapters, we hear only that the brothers somehow both attended their father Isaac's funeral. Other than that, they will never lay eyes on one another again, and we will never see Esau either. Ultimately, they will represent nations that even now are at enmity in the Middle East. Now, like Sondheim, the musical Into the Woods, the biblical writers of Genesis have left us with a vexing and complex narrative. It's not a neatly wrapped package of happily ever after. In large measure, I think that's the price we pay for faith in a God who works in the world and calls us to do the same. One of the lessons that Sondheim's characters were to learn was that their actions had consequences, and very often those consequences were impossible or very hard to undo. They were to learn also that change in people comes slowly, if at all, and even then with great effort. And they were to learn that some people, like the witch, are worse than others, like Cinderella. So it is in our biblical stories, and in none more than in this morning's. Jacob, heel grabber, cheat, and usurper, hasn't yet been able to change his spots, at least not fully. Even after wrestling in the night on the banks of the Jabbok and being told he was no longer to be named heel grabber, he hasn't left his grabbing ways fully behind. He still shows favoritism in his family. He turns away from his brother's overtures of reconciliation, possibly because he was still afraid, maybe because he wanted to secure the promised land just for himself. On the other hand, Esau, the hothead earlier on, comes off the more open-handed. He seems to have forgiven all and to truly welcome his brother home. But it is not to be. And we are left with tension and no little sorrow at the conclusion. There has been a modicum of admission of guilt, acts of forgiveness and rituals of reconciliation. But the consequences of long ago actions and deceits still hang like a cloud over Esau and Jacob. And one cannot help but wish that it could have ended differently. Maybe, just maybe, like Into the Woods, this is a cautionary tale for us. Actions, our actions, have long-lasting consequences, and undoing them is not as easy as wishing it so in a fairy tale. God will never abandon Jacob. God will never abandon us. But God's heart will break time and again for what might have been. Amen.